T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, if you live in Kansas City, you know we're a very unique place. There are so many things here in Kansas City that are different from everywhere else, mainly the state line. But did you ever wonder how Kansas City actually became a city? Well, it had to do with a barroom brawl and a family from St. Louis.
Well, I think one of the great conversations we can have, Diane, about our town in Kansas City is how exactly this place was created. In fact, a lot of folks will be hearing this right around the 181st anniversary of something that almost cost us Kansas City as we know it today, huh?
Seriously, yeah. Kansas City almost did not come to be, so we have some people to thank for its creation, and it's a pretty cool story. The whole way that this dispute happened and how Kansas City was formed right there on the bluffs.
Well, it always seems like things happen, people fight about things, and then ultimately the right thing, you know, kind of comes out in the wash, as they like to say. And it seems like the right thing kind of came out in the wash with the way that Kansas City was founded, because ultimately somebody basically tried to steal the city from, you know, from the rightful owners.
Yep.
And keep it as their own. And we could have had a town that really maybe never evolved into anything at all if the right folks don't get their hands on
this. That's absolutely true. I really believe that this one little incident, and that goes to show that everything is so connected.
Right.
If that one little piece wouldn't have happened in 1838, then we certainly would not be sitting in Kansas City, Missouri today.
I mean, and that's why when you look at the movie Back to the Future, the space-time continuum that they talk about in that movie really does, I mean, in fun and in theory, it sounds ridiculous, but if you go back in time and you change one event, so many different things can happen and a trickle-down effect that you don't even know about. So like one little incident that took place in 1838 and maybe had an effect on a couple of people back then, ultimately, if it doesn't get fixed and doesn't get righted, maybe we're not sitting here today talking about Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas.
Absolutely. And I think even the beginnings of Kansas City starts a little bit earlier than this land dispute in 1838. And so we're just going to kind of go backwards here just for a minute. And Francois Choteau came to the Kansas City area. And of course, it was, you know, there was nothing going on here. He was with his wife, Berenice, which is a great story because he takes her on, you know, on a flatboat up the Missouri River and essentially on their honeymoon.
Yeah, I saw that.
Isn't
in
that
your
romantic?
Article, like a romantic
wow.
honeymoon cruise up the Missouri
yeah,
River going
like,
opposite of the current. Do you think she had a paddle or did he do all the paddling?
I would hope to God that he at least did some of that work because, you know, at that point, I think she even was probably pregnant with her first kid. Honeymoon in 1819. They're looking for a place to put a trading post on this side of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And Francois' history, which is, I always like to, we always have a little battle between St. Louis and Kansas City.
Sure.
And I got to admit that Choteaus really were the founders of St. Louis. So the uncle of Francois was the one who actually founded St. Louis. So they have a pretty good trading or a pretty good record, needless to state. So he comes back in 1821. He builds a log cabin at the convergence of the Kaw and the Missouri Rivers, literally just as a trading post. And people followed him. This was because they could see, wouldn't it be easier to outfit people? Wouldn't it be easier to trade with the Native Americans on the western side versus at St. Louis? So this was just building their commerce. So about 24 French Catholic families, French Canadian Catholic families, follow the Choteaus. And one of them was Gabriel Prudhomme. And I just love his name anyway, mm-hmm. Prudhomme. And most Kansas Cityans, we've heard of Choteau Traffic Way and all of this. And in St. Louis, you see the Choteau name.
Choteau's everywhere.
Everywhere,
there, yeah.
Right. But here in Kansas City, you don't see anything Prudhomme-based, which kind of, you know, irks me a little bit because we just haven't really, if what happened to him wouldn't have happened, we would not be standing here or sitting here today. So the Native Americans nicknamed the area Choteau's Town. They start building up this whole area. And by 1825, these families have moved in. And by 1826, about where Truce Avenue is today, if Truce would to like just legit go right into the water, is about where the trading post for the Choteaus was. But the French Catholic families, for the most part, were settled in the West Bottoms. So as land was starting to go up for sale, Gabriel Prudhomme, who was born in about 1790. He and his wife, Josephine, he's a blacksmith by trade. He purchases around 257 acres, and this land would have been from the Bluffs, so the riverfront, to Independence Avenue. So it's pretty short and skinny. That's about Fifth Street, you know, and then over to Broadway to Home Street. So this is 257 acres. He operated a little town tavern, so I like him. And he also had a ferry boat crossing because there was a rocky part, which would now later become known as Westport Landing, where they could do a ferry boat across the Missouri River. So this is the land. This is it. And unfortunately for my buddy Gabriel, he had a little bit of a problem. His wife was pregnant. They had six kids already. His wife's pregnant. And he dies in a barroom brawl. I don't know who he pissed off, but something happened and the locals, he was gone. He was a young guy. So then you have your land. Of course, at this point, your land's going to go into probate.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have a will. So that, of course, drags things out. So it takes about 5 years. And you can imagine now this woman is a widow with seven kids waiting for this land settlement. She needs the money.
Yeah.
So they get this guy named James Hyatt McGee, which, of course, McGee Street, very, really one of the first, settlers of the area. He came in about 1828 from Kentucky. He actually is the first one to bring slaves to this area as well. So there's the slave connection, of course. So he's actually kind of appointed to be the trustee of the estate. And so it's got to go into, you know, they've got to advertise the land. They have to say, you know, hey, does anybody owe any money? There's all these laws that you have to do. And essentially, they put two ads in the newspaper, real small ads. Because I don't think there was ever any intention to have this sale go through at a high price. Mm-hmm. So two ads, one in St. Louis and one in Liberty, saying, hey, we're going to sell off this land. So on July 7th, 1838, McGee cries the sale. He doesn't even hire someone to do it, which would be kind of a little bit against the law. He cries the sale, and the bid starts at $1,800. And the story goes that the only person standing there was Abraham Fonda and probably Fry McGee, which, isn't that a great name?
Fry McGee is a good one. Fry. Yeah, I like that. I like that name a lot.
It's a great name.
And so they get the land for $1,800.
$1,800.
And then everybody goes crazy and loses their mind. And goes, wait a second here.
Yeah, because Abraham Fonda, this guy who didn't, he kind of traveled through the area, but he wasn't really, he ends up moving to Kentucky later. I think he was kind of mad at Kansas City. Abraham Fonda ends up buying the land, but he's underwritten by Fry McGee because he didn't even have enough money. So this just looks pretty shady.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that where the shady lady comes from? Then?
Maybe that was the name of the bar. Don't know.
We don't know the name of Prudhomme's bar, huh?
It was probably just the saloon, because yeah. I mean, there was no competition, you know.
At that time, there wasn't.
People were pretty angry about this, because there are people that see that what will become Kansas City. This is there can be a real town here, even though it was on the Bluffs. One of those would be, of course, John Calvin McCoy. So he's part of this group. He goes to Independence, Missouri. That's where the courthouse is. You know, we're unique for having two courthouses anyway. They go and they say that this was McGee was unfit to actually be able to be the one to cry this sale. And it actually ends up being null and void. Well, I'm sure the widow's just like, come on. Like, she just needs the money. But $1,800 was like a steal.
Yeah, what was $1,800 valued back then, like in today's dollars?
It would be it's really hard to figure out that far back what the value would be. But you're still looking at probably no more than $20,000.
Okay, so and very cheap.
257 though. Acres. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, really cheap. So there is a new sale ordered to be come through, and this is November 14th, 1838. And I love this, and it's a great story because you could just imagine it's a wilderness, you know, and they got the ferry boat crossing, I guess a grocery store, Choteau's Trading Post, and a couple businesses, probably blacksmith shops. But in general, the area is just a vast wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting at One-Eyed Ellis's cabin. I don't know who One-Eyed Ellis is, but I'm dying to find out exactly who he was. He obviously had one eye, and he had a cabin at the foot of Main Street overlooking the Bluffs. They meet there. It's real cold out, so they've got a big fire going. And the 14 men who had organized themselves as the town company sit down, and essentially the sheriff is going to call this sale. They call for it, and they win the land. And thank God they did. So for just over $4,200 is how much they end up paying. So that's quite a bit of a difference, $3,000 in a very short amount of time.
So the widow McGee or widow Prudhomme gets more money. Yeah.
Right. So she gets what she needs, which is great. So this town company, some of the names that you see are going to sound very familiar to Kansas City. Of course, I think it's ironic that part of this was you had William Gillis, and Gillis House was a big,
sure,
you know, hotel and business on the levee later. William Sublette, you've got John Calvin McCoy, of course. Some other names that would be familiar to Kansas City history is William Chick. He was also very foundational in Kansas City. And then I love the fact that Abraham Fonda is there. I don't think nobody liked him. I can tell you that. Like there was some bad blood with Abraham. I think he was a little cocky, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fry McGee's there too. So Fry is actually back into the mix. And these are the 14 original founders of Kansas City. So then, of course, you have to, okay, we're going to form this town company. Obviously, we want a town here. So now we have to name our town. Interesting stuff here.
Well, and what I find interesting, and we went through so much there, is that, like, the 14 founding members of Kansas City, except for Prudhomme, and I consider him one of the founders,
right,
of Kansas City because,
mm-hmm,
it was his land originally, everybody's got a bar or a restaurant named after them. Why has Prudhomme,
yes,
been so kind of stricken from the record when he was one of the original people here that had the land that ultimately gave us the start for what Kansas City, Missouri is today?
I wish that I could say that Kansas City has been really good at some pieces of the history of the area and been very, very bad about other pieces of the history. I would love to go back in time and ask, like, McCoy, who platted our streets, why wasn't there a Prudhomme Street?
Mm-hmm.
There were definitely named streets for other people. Or why there isn't a business today or a park, even. Give me a park. Like Prudhomme Park.
Yeah, that sounds
good.
Take
me to PP.
Do you think, sometimes I got to have people do me that too, especially after a long Saturday night. Do you think like the widow may have rubbed people the wrong way or pissed people off or got to the point where she was like just not bearable and everybody just wanted just to be done with her because the sale took so long, so she was getting antsy and angry about not getting the money?
I actually don't think that would probably be the case. Only because,
or was he just a total jerk to everybody too when all this was going on? Everybody's like, "Screw you, pal! When you're done here, there's no bar named after you.
We are not going to name anything after you."
Yeah,
which is interesting because actually, the Prudhomme, you would think that you lost your wife, or you lost your husband, and you're a widow, and you know, first of all, you would expect that she would have remarried,
right?
And that would have been a really smart move, as one of these singles guys that were part of that 14 original town company wouldn't have married her,
mm-hmm,
probably could have kept the land, but she actually did stay in the area. I find this really interesting. And there was even a dispute in the 1920s about some of the land maybe not being sold correctly, and that the Prudhommes, actually some of the kids went after. They didn't win any money, but they went after the Gillis is one of them. They went after to try to say part of this should belong to us. But I think it's interesting that she did stick around. And kind of Berenice Choteau, back to the, you know, Francis or Francois, however you want to call him. Berenice, she was a widow by the time, you know, the town starts to develop. And instead of moving back to St. Louis, where they were from, instead of moving back, she stayed in Kansas City. I mean, she was diehard. They called her the mother of Kansas City, Berenice Choteau. She was, she didn't die till 1888, but, her husband died, you know, much earlier. There were quite a few founders that died within a very short amount of time that kind of mixes up Kansas City history also. But I think probably what happened is that, I think it's interesting to bring up that Josephine Prudhomme's wife did not leave Kansas City. Could have been for a lot of different reasons, but her children, all as far as I know, for the most part, stayed in Kansas City. And one of her daughters actually married the third mayor of Kansas City. So they stayed within the echelon of society. It's just they, you know, for whatever the reason, Prudhomme kind of dropped off the map.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was a Prudhomme something. I think it'd be nice. I mean, we have a Port Fonda something.
Well,
we
know,
can talk about that with the naming of the city.
We can get into that in just a minute. But what happens if like the original Fry McGee and Fonda alone, mm-hmm, get that land? What do you think happens at that point in time if they don't reopen it and get 12 other people involved into this whole thing?
I think there would have been a town. I just don't think it would have developed it the way it did. Because we can tell because of the McGees, and we'll be doing a whole thing on them too. The McGees were really instrumental in taking Fry McGee's father, James Hyatt. He actually owned 1,000 acres in the heart of Kansas City. We're talking where the crossroads is, all the way over to kind of the Quality Hill area. He owned Southwest Boulevard. I mean, their family cemetery was right off Southwest Boulevard.
Hmm.
It's not hopefully not there anymore, but regardless, this whole idea of building up into a city, I think they knew that there was a possibility because of that riverfront traffic They knew there was a possibility. Would it have developed the way it did? Fry was successful at developing some of Kansas City, but not without the help of people like John McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if McCoy wouldn't have been in the picture, and he was, of course, the founder of Westport, he's one of the original founders of Kansas City. There's no McCoy Street anymore. There used to be. But McCoy was such an instrumental part of this development that if he wouldn't have been a part of it, I don't think we'd be sitting here right now.
All right. So let's look at the Prudhomme and and his death. If he's not, like, back in the day, everybody's just handling their own business. If I didn't like you, we met at the saloon and we shot each other, like a free-for-all or something.
That's what they call vigilante it, justice.
Yeah, vigilante frontier. Justice, frontier mm-hmm. justice, all that kind of stuff. What if he never dies in that barroom brawl? How does that change the course of where Kansas City is? Like, did he have a vision to grow it and to become a big town like this? Or did his death really kind of snowball the development of what is Kansas City today?
Not that we want to be happy someone died in a brawl or whatever, but I don't think we'd be here, honestly. I don't think that he had the intention of developing. He was a blacksmith by trade. He had a grocery store and a tavern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was operating, you know, obviously with some enterprise, but not with the vision of what would happen if I cut these bluffs and built a, you know, I don't think that would have ever happened. So no, I don't think it would have happened there. Do I think McCoy would have developed something else? Could Westport have become like a larger spot than it? Cause it kind of got absorbed by Kansas City eventually,
sure.
But could it have been maybe a little bit larger? But you got to remember, then we wouldn't have Westport Landing had he not passed.
Well, I think, like, my biggest question, I guess, with the whole Westport thing is, would Westport have been able to stand on its own without the access to the river? Because it seems like every town back then, when we started to build cities, developed because there was the river or the confluence of two rivers or three rivers or whatever the case may be for transportation and travel and trade and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have the access to the river, because Westport is landlocked. I mean, if we don't have access to that river, does Westport have an opportunity to grow and prosper like that?
It would have still been a trade spot. Because you had the riverboat traffic at Blue Mills Landing and Independence. So Independence was the original outfitter. And then because of Westport Landing being further down, that would have been the smarter place to drop yourself off.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interesting, you know, what ifs here, but Westport still probably could have developed had he seen the vision. But the only reason he saw the vision really for Westport in the first place was because of Westport Landing. And the fact that you could land those river boats right there in front and then take a 3-mile journey straight south and then do your last bit of outfitting and then head out into, you know, the wilderness, which would be essentially Kansas Territory, which wasn't even a territory at the time. It was just the Wild West. So it's hard to know if each event definitely parallels each other, how that would have developed or how things would have changed. And your guess is as good as mine. I'd like to believe that maybe something would have been there, but we wouldn't be a metropolis. There's no way.
Why Westport so far away from the river? Why was that established where it is?
Part of it had to do with the location of a couple different entities. I mean, first of all, you could get land cheap out that direction. So that was going
out south back in the day.
Cass County.
Yeah,
what?
That's Miami County back then, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so I mean, cost of that. And the fact that he also knew, and because Isaac McCoy, which is John McCoy's father, was an instrumental part of surveying lands with the Native Americans. They had relationships with Native American tribes as well. So the location had a lot to do with all the commerce that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And just over, and we talked about this before, just over into Kansas Territory, eventually you do have missionaries that are stationed as well. And they're stationing themselves pretty conveniently on the Santa Fe Trail. So the Santa Fe Trail is going to be going through no matter what, and there will be outfitting spots along the way. It's just a question of where that's going to be. McCoy made sure that he platted. Nobody wanted, he had to practically give away lots to start out with. Like, nobody wanted anything to do with this. Like, this is real far.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
3 miles is like,
well,
no
that's what
joke.
I was gonna say. 3 miles back then is like, because you're basically on foot or horseback. I mean, what's that in today's terms? I mean, is that like let's just say Loch Lloyd today from downtown? Would that be kind of like the distance?
Oh, it'd be, I think, even further than that. Because then you're talking about the conditions of roads.
Right.
I mean, you're not looking at, you know, we don't have paved highways at this point. A washout would destroy travel.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too many. It would have been an all day thing. But if you just traveled that, you know, 6 or so miles from Independence or Blue Mills Landing, essentially where Independence was outfitting, right? And you take that 6 miles off your journey, you're talking about probably a day and a half just by stopping at Westport Landing instead. I mean, Independence was not thrilled when they were like, oh, great. Look at this Westport thing happening over here. Mm-hmm. They weren't proponents. And there were a lot of arguments back and forth. Westport was a big time, you know, most of the people that settled in Westport did own slaves. And then a lot of those same guys, I preface this because Westport is older than Kansas City. We wouldn't have that. They're such a hand in hand operation. The people that purchased the town company were Westport merchants. I mean, they were the ones who dug in because they knew that. I mean, I don't think they ever envisioned a city being so large that Westport is Kansas City now.
Right.
I mean, there would be no way. I mean, that's like New York City size to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure most of them have never been to New York City either. So I think that to have that overall vision, and we owe a lot of this, and I mean a lot of it, to John McCoy. And I wish was, you know, poor restaurant's not there.
Yeah, we were talking about
no restaurant for McCoy anymore, and he doesn't have a street anymore. I wish there was more. There is a statue, of course, in the Westport area, and it's Pioneer Park, I believe, mm-hmm. that has McCoy, and it has Jim Bridger, who's a mountain man, and then also who is it? Alexander Majors is the other one. Wow, well, I feel like I'm being quizzed.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm not quizzing you. We're just talking. But it seems like, as you mentioned, McCoy no longer has the restaurant, doesn't have the street anymore.
Yeah.
But we've done a really remarkable job on the Missouri side anyway. I mean, I don't know anybody named 119th in College, so I can't tell you who they're named after. But we've done a remarkable job on the Missouri side of preserving the history of, you know, the names of the people, except Prudhomme, who came here and founded the town. Even Fonda has a Port Fonda. And I don't think anybody, like, to me, when I was first reading your blog about that, I went, oh, so that's where they got Port Fonda from. I just thought it was a fun, you know, fun name for a restaurant. And little do you know, it has that historical background. So going around Kansas City, what are some of the other things, from restaurants to bars to maybe even streets, that you see that have historical meanings that maybe none of us really know are historical meanings?
And that's true. And it kind of on the Port Fonda front, because we skipped a little bit over this. Port Fonda was the name that Abraham Fonda suggested to be the name of Kansas City.
Right.
Like, hey, I got an idea. Port Fonda. He's the only one who threw his own name
in
the mix.
But Prudhomme Town was kind of was thrown out there in Choteau Village or something like that.
Choteau's Town is what they always called it anyway.
Right.
But Possum Trot came up.
Well,
some
that was
of these,
a stupid name. Why does that one always seemingly come up when people talk about what Kansas City could have been called?
Because when we complain about Kansas City, and there's two Kansas Cities, I think it's like the, well, we could have been Possum
Trot. Right. Well, we could have been Port Fonda, too.
Could have been Port Fonda. The whole company shot that idea down really quick. Rabbitville was brought up. I want to mention that when they were talking about the town company, I think it was the town of Kansas was mm-hmm. the original name. And it didn't become Kansas City until 1880, actually. And, even John McCoy later in his life, when he was still alive, was joking around about how when Kansas City, Kansas was created, he was like, whoa, this is not going to be good.
Yeah.
Like, this is messing with our name. That he actually kind of jokingly petitioned the Kansas City Star. Hey, you know what? You know, I'm going to start just writing my address as Port Fonda. Like he jokingly said we should go back to that name. I think a lot of these names were a joke in the first place is my point. I think they kind of always knew it would probably be, they talked about Cosmouth as another one, which would make sense because of the area. So a lot of those names are, a lot of people take them very seriously. I think a lot of it was a bunch of dudes sitting around drinking whiskey, buying some land and joking around.
So why did they land on the town of Kansas when you were in Missouri? Is it strictly because of the river?
It's the river. It's the Kansas Indians for and the spelling early on is always kind of messed up as well.
Because that pisses people off now today, like in Missouri. Well, I remember named after Kansas.
Well, and that's just absolutely not 100% false. And
right.
I know I'm from the Missouri side, the good side, but whatever. So even though Kansas City was Kansas City, or the city of Kansas, the town of Kansas existed before Kansas Territory was even named. It was an unnamed, unowned reservation.
So Kansas, the state, was essentially named after the city, you could
or
say.
The Indians, or however
Indians,
you want
right,
to say
however
it.
You want to say it.
Yes. So we were here first. I'm going to say it 100 times. We win this battle.
Okay.
Kansas City was named before, or the town of Kansas was named before you had Kansas Territory. Kansas Territory didn't happen until 1854. Mm-hmm. We're in 1838. So we win on this one for sure, by like almost a teenager.
Yeah,
we
no
win,
kidding,
you know?
Right?
But like when it comes to these names, like you brought up, we used to have McCoy's Public House, there are some good things that we have named. Of course, we talked about McGee, and a lot of these old streets. Troost, of course, was named after Benoit Troost, who was the first physician in Kansas City. But there, some of these names kind of absorbed into some landmarks, like Gillis. Gillis house. He eventually, his niece inherited all of his loads of money and started Gillis Opera House. So there were a lot of things in Kansas City, unfortunately, that don't exist anymore because we do like to tear a lot of stuff down. Mm-hmm. But there are a few things that stand. A couple of things would be like Coates House. You know, Coates House was founding was always a hotel in this spot by Kersey Coates. And it was originally called the Broadway Hotel. And the hotel has been on that spot since 1858 at 10th and Broadway. Kersey Coates is the one who developed Quality Hill.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool. There was a huge fire. The worst fire in Kansas City history happened at that actual building, but they have restored it to it's part of the National Register. Another one would be Webster House, you know, the restaurant. Okay. Webster House is in Webster School, and Webster School is, at 17th and Wyandotte, and it was in operation from 1886 to 1933. And then, of course, kind of stand dilapidated. And then thank God that these people came in and said, hey, let's put a cool restaurant here.
Yeah.
And kept the name. And I think we in Kansas City, here we go again. I think we in Kansas City have to watch out when we do rename things because it does lose its provenance in our history. There's so many things being built that are new that can have a name as well.
Right. Sure.
You know, I mean, that's just my
but
thought
the Port
on that.
Fonda one really hit me like strong. Like,
right.
Wow, somebody did a mm-hmm. great job of research to find
yeah.
that name. Like, mm-hmm. you just don't think about that kind of stuff and what it takes to name a restaurant or a street or a hotel or a bar or something like that.
Yeah. Somebody must have been a history buff or something or did
yeah.
some research. Like, what would be something cool that we could bring back and, you know, maybe slowly educate people about like how they come up with the name.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate that. And it's a great restaurant that they have given homage. I mean, even though it's to Abraham Fonda, who almost messed this whole thing up, but
sure.
you know,
but
which I think is funny.
Paying like sort of tribute to the past and people
right.
that kind of
mm-hmm.
help get this city started to where we are. And so I think when you walk around town and you look at things, you go, why is it called that? Maybe there's a reason why a place is called that and a really good historical reason as to why this place is called that.
And I think that's absolutely true. And I get a little angry sometimes because I see things like parks, and parks are such an easy thing to name and then to pay homage to maybe who originally owned something. And I see like Van Brunt Park is getting, you know, the city's getting rid of it. I mean, they can't take care of what they have. And then we see some of the things I laugh because I've done a lot of research, of course, in the South Kansas City area, and there's a park that we used to hang out with, or hang out at when we were kids, and also when we shouldn't have been hanging out when we were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always called MIG. It's Migliazzo Park. It sits on land that was owned by Marcus Gill, and there's a whole cool history about that. And so I always joke that it should be Gill Park, but you know, it's MIG because it's named after some guy who, you know, was on the parks board. I'm like, all right. I mean, no offense to the Migliazzo family, but you know, I wish that we could pay homage. It could be Gil Migliazzo Park or something. I don't like losing history when we can tell the story right there on the land. It's so easy to put up a marker. It costs money, yes, but to tell people about Kansas City's history.
Well, and I think also, too, what we learned from this episode is that the rivalry with St. Louis literally goes back to day one of the founding of this town.
It's true. It's like, who owns the Shotos? I mean, St. Louis had them first, but thank God they came this direction.
And they ultimately founded Kansas City.
Yep. Got to love Shotos Town. We're still a part of it.
So did they make the right term with the choice with the name, calling it the town of Kansas then?
I think so. I wish that, you know, your side of the state, as in Kansas, would have been more creative and come up with something different. I've never really looked into it. And I'm sure I've never seen anybody say anything else but Kansas Territory.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if somewhere deep in some manuscript somewhere there isn't like, you know, the checklist of, should we call it this? Should we call it this? It was always just Kansas Territory. I think just because of the settlement of the Kansas Indians, which were one of many tribes that were in the area.
Were there any, are there any Prudhomes still around the Kansas City area that like get mad that we're not giving them credit for their town?
Good point. A lot of those Prudhomes married into other, you know, well-known French Catholic families. And even Prudhomes' grave on the side, he was buried at the Catholic cemetery, which was, would be right where the cathedral is now. And they dug up all those bodies and almost moved all the pieces. That's a whole other story. But to St. Mary's Cemetery. And Prudhomme's grave, they don't know where it really is. So there's, yeah, I know. Just wow. Like he could be still under a parking lot somewhere. We don't know. I mean, talk about really, really screwing that one up. But wouldn't it
be fitting if he's like buried under a parking lot right in the heart of Kansas City then?
And he's just like flipping us off underground? Yeah. Maybe.
I think that would be fitting if he was buried right in the center of town, you know, underneath the parking lot to say, hey, look, I'm still here and you can't take this away from me.
You can't take this. Yeah, this is my land. I do think it's interesting. The whole family, most of these, they did stay in the area and they married into other families, as I said before. I was contacted not too long ago by a lady who was related to Gabriel Prudhomme and really wanted to know more about her own family's history. It's the first, and that's what's so great, the bigger this gets, is that it's nice to have people reaching out to me versus me, like, stalking people, trying to get them to respond to me. Like, please answer my questions. But she reached out because she's like, you know, I think it's really cool that, you know, I had no idea that my family has such deep-rooted connections in Kansas City. I'm like, sorry that your great-whatever-grandfather died, but thank God he did, or we would not be here.
I hope you enjoyed our look about how Kansas City became an actual city. And you always wonder, and go back to that movie, Back to the Future, if you messed around with the space-time continuum, where would we be today? What if that barroom brawl never happened? What if they named the city Port Fonda, or we were sitting in Possum Trot? Who knows what Kansas City would have been like had we not regrouped and did the right thing almost 185 years ago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.